Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Welcome back. Richard, we just finished a great interview with Zilia Litvin. She is a developer. She's a psychologist. She's finishing up her doctorate. Right. And she's a psychologist who is building an app called EQ that will be available here in the United States and in the United Kingdom in late May.
I have to say that I've been impressed with all of the people we've interviewed. Mm-hmm. But this is right there at the top.
Yeah.
The initiative and the application
right.
of psychology to technology.
Right.
You know, we just finished a week of podcasts yeah. on this topic of technology. Really an impressive undertaking.
Right.
She's carving out some brand new territory.
Right.
I'm surprised that nobody has done this before now.
Right.
I just assumed that they had. But she's really, this is groundbreaking work.
Yeah.
And a
yeah.
fascinating interview. And a lovely individual.
Yes, yes. You know, she, and it's interesting because as she's described it, she came to, you know, she found a love for psychology mm-hmm. early in
right.
life,
mm-hmm.
12, I think
12
she said.
12 years old, right.
And then, but then had psychology was kind of put on hold for a while
yeah.
as she worked as a model, did some different things.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came back and is really exploring this marriage between technology and psychology.
Right.
In really wonderful ways.
Mm-hmm,
We mentioned in the interview that we, you know, we recorded the podcast a couple weeks ago about persuasive technology.
Right.
And this is persuasive technology used for good.
Right.
You know, it's used yeah. in a way to get people engaged in an application that's mm-hmm. going to help them and with their mental health.
You know, a friend of mine told me probably two years ago that gaming developers would be interested in using their technology
right.
for these purposes because they're taking such a negative, they're developing such a negative reputation
right.
With first-person shooter games and all that. And so he always argued that they would probably be interested
right.
in this kind of work for that
Absolutely.
Reason.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing it, so kudos
yeah.
to her.
We would definitely encourage you to yeah. follow her work and follow the release of mm-hmm. EQ. It's E. Q-U-O-O
right.
Is how you spell it. But
it
will be
pronounced EQ.
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 EQ, the emotional fitness game.
Right.
And it's very interactive. I love the avatar, Dr.
Right.
Joy. And it's, you know, I learned something.
I did too.
I didn't know that Freud in German meant joy.
And I am going
Freud
to take
means joy.
I am going to take my sister to task because as many times as she and I have talked about Freud, she's never mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to call her today and chastise her.
But she deserves it.
We learned that this morning that
yeah.
Freud means
joy.
Though he was a joyless creature. You know, Freud said there are no jokes.
Right.
You know, that's what I always talk to my family about. There are no jokes. He was a joyless creature. But his name means joy.
That's
so
interesting.
Yeah, we learned that this morning.
That's what she taught us.
Thank you. You'll learn more than that by listening to the interview, by looking at this app.
Loads more. And we will continue to follow her work and make some announcements when
mm-hmm.
the app becomes available.
And she's assured us that she would come back.
She will come back.
After the app is out and we can talk about it again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very exciting. And but we would definitely encourage you to follow her work. We have links in the show notes to all of her
mm-hmm.
Platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and her website
Android,
itself,
right.
the EQ
mm-hmm.
website. So
right.
it's all there.
Yep.
So, all right. Well,
good interview.
We hope that you enjoy the interview. Well, welcome back, Richard. We are so excited to have the opportunity to talk with Dr. Zilia Litvin, who's actually in London, England right
yes.
now.
Almost dinner.
Yeah.
Late in the afternoon there.
It's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon there, I think.
Right.
And we're going to talk about her app that she is working and working to build, and it's so exciting. I can hardly even think of what words to say.
Well, as I've already said, I just have to hear this journey about how you're trained as a psychologist, isn't that correct? Yeah. How this psychologist moved into, because we have talked about doing similar kinds of things.
Right.
And we get blocked at every turn.
We do.
So somehow this woman has managed to overcome those obstacles.
Yes.
So I'm interested in knowing how you did that and how you developed this interest in the first place, because your area of expertise is AI. Is that correct?
Actually, clinical psychology and systemic therapy, and artificial intelligence is kind of self-taught at the moment while developing the application, because of course we're looking at these different tools that we can use to make the app better, and then artificial intelligence is definitely one of them.
Wow. Okay. Now, the thing that you just said that really struck was self-taught. You self-taught AI, because that's impressive.
So I have to say two things. Unfortunately, my PhD isn't finished yet, so I'm not a doctor yet. So in 2 months when we speak again, then it'll be fine, but it's not ready yet.
Oh,
and second of all, when I say self-taught with artificial intelligence, that is just enough knowledge to know that I can ask the developers and the algorithm developers, programmers, where to put it and what it's supposed to do. That does not mean that I can actually develop the algorithms myself.
Yeah. But still, I've sort of put a toe into the area of building apps and trying to understand that language, and to be able to talk to the developers in an intelligent way is really impressive.
Yeah, that was a very steep learning curve, because I would tell my developer something and then he'd come back with a completely different product. And I was like, how is it possible that what I have said has translated into this, which is so completely different from what I expected? Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to be able to actually use his language to be able to tell him what I needed. And once I did that, like, he was spot on. It wasn't a problem at all. It's just a different way of thinking and processing information.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit, but before we get into the app, tell us a little bit about your journey that got you into clinical psychology to begin with.
Okay, I have a bit of an unusual background, I would say. I was born in Germany. When I was two, my family moved to Southern California. I stayed there until I was 12. Then we moved to Luxembourg. We stayed in Luxembourg for 2 years. Then we moved to Germany, and with a quick stint in France. And all this moving around made me very confused about what was going on around me, culturally and socially. And I always felt that I was out of control of what was happening and how people reacted. And so when my sister, for her 15th birthday, I was 12, got a book about body language, it blew my mind. I was thinking there is actually a handbook or a science about understanding why people behave the way they do and why I feel the way I did. And that is when I decided to study psychology, and I was 12. And I guess I'm very lucky that the more I learned about psychology, the more interested I got. A lot of times, you know, you want to be a fireman or an astronaut when you're 12. And then when you get older, you're like, yeah, it's not my thing. And I grew to love psychology more and more. Mm-hmm. So that was the first step. And the second step was actually when after school, I was scouted as a model. And so I actually didn't start studying straight away. So I went into modeling for a couple of years, actually 17 years. And I think that is the root in why I decided to do something so completely different from what a lot of psychologists do, because I have this dual background of consumer advertising, marketing, outward focus, and then the academic research-oriented content and helping people. And these two things together is what you need to have to make a successful digital mental health product. Because a lot of products are out there that are, they're very good, but people don't stick to them because they're not interesting. They're not sticky enough.
Yes, definitely. And we were just talking about some of the different types of apps that are out there. And yeah, I think that when I talk to patients and I encourage them to look at apps or, you know, just different computer-based programs that they can try to, you know, keep track of things or to monitor things, that's sort of one of the things that they come up with, is that it just loses some interest.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And that was also a bit of my journey because after I finished my master's in psychology, I wanted to do something a little bit outside of the box. And I was thinking I might personally can reach maybe, let's say if I'm really working hard, 6 patients a day and that over 5 days a week, right? And that's a lot of lives that I could, you know, add value to. But at the end of the day, there are so many people out there that aren't getting the care that they need. They don't have the money, they're living in areas that, and they're not willing, there's treatment resistance and everything. So I thought, okay, for the first time in the history of mankind, we have a platform that people use every single day. They take it with them, it's next to the bed, they take it with them to the loo. And I'm not saying this is a good thing, but you know, it is a part of everyone's life, is their smartphone. I think at the moment, 77% of all Americans have a smartphone. Some have 2 or 3. And so that is a platform where you can actually offer mental health and with a tool that they're so used to using that there's very low resistance. And so I pitched this idea to my professor, and I was very lucky that Professor Dr. Marcus Meyer has a very open mind, and he's interested in new things and kind of like thinking outside of the box in Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich. And so he's like, okay, go ahead, try to do something like that. So my hypothesis was that I could develop an application that significantly lowers depression levels. And so I developed the first product of PsychApps, and it was made out of a lot of psychoeducation. It had the Beck's Depression Inventory, a life satisfaction scale, and a 1 Likert anxiety item. And then there was positive psychology tips to self-regulate, and we had a little bit of CBT in there as well. And we did a proper clinical trial with 1,200 participants. We had a post and pre-evaluation over a whole month. And it took me like 1.5 years to do that. So that was one of the very painful process. Wow. That's maybe one of the reasons why you haven't finished your app yet, is because that is really terrible. And we could prove that, you know, using the app on a regular basis over the course of a month significantly lowers depression levels. But then when we started putting it out in the market, people would drop off after the first week, the second week, and retention was really terrible.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, I developed a product that just sucks, right? Yeah. So maybe my app sucks. But actually, when I went back to the books, I saw that attrition is one of the biggest problems with digital mental health products. So that brought me to where EQ is right now. So my team and I, we were very close to saying, okay, we can't do this. And we know we worked on this for two years, but we have to let it go. And then I started looking at Serious Games. And have you heard of Duolingo, the language learning app?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Duolingo uses psychology and gamifying to teach people languages. And they have like 110 million downloads. People are loving it and they're sticking to it and they're really learning through that. So I thought, why couldn't we do that in teaching psychological skills, which in a way, therapy is learning psychological skills, right? Amongst other things. So I, through serendipity, met the head of Collision Studios, a gaming company that's been working for 15 plus years. They've built apps and console games like Walking Dead, The Game of Thrones. They have Barbie. They have Scrabble. They, like, you name it. The CEO was working with Mattel and Warner Brothers and Atari. And he had been looking for a company to do a psychological game for some time now, but hadn't found the right match. And so we said, okay, the gaming industry made $108 billion in 2017, just in the USA. That means that they're doing something that is hijacking the brain's reward system, keeping people really sticking to the game, right? We could probably do the same thing to get people to stick to therapy. And so that's where EQ comes to play.
Great. Wow. Well, you know, in the other week, we talked about persuasive technology,
right?
and sort of along with those same lines, the way that gamers and the industry is using psychological approaches, psychological techniques to keep people engaged in some of these activities, whether it's games or Facebook or different forms of social media. And so here you are, it sounds like you're using this for power for good.
Yes, exactly. That's what I keep on telling, like all the evil little tricks that they use to get people to you know, spend money or to get addicted to their games is like, we're using it to help people help themselves.
Right. That's great. And so is EQ, which is the app that you have, that will be coming out in here in the United States, I think in May. Is that an evolution of your first app or is it a completely separate app?
It is, well, a lot of the things that I've learned in my first app have bled into the new app, but there isn't that much crossover. And EQ at the moment is subclinical. So we just started a trial to prove that it boosts life satisfaction, relationship satisfaction, and happiness in a way to boost resilience, because a lot of the skills that you learn there are very important to process stress or process emotional turbulence. And so, but it's not, it doesn't treat mental illness. And the next version of the game, so right now the game is coming out, I'm speaking to investors and I'm raising 1.4 million to be able to add proper therapeutic features with that are evidence-based and clinically tested. And we can say, like, with FDA approval, this game actually treats low-level depression.
Great. Yeah, there was I can't remember the guy's name now, at the University of, or Florida State University, he just received a National Institutes of Health grant for $1 or $2 million to develop a game that they hope will be FDA approved for the treatment of ADHD. So this is right in line with that.
There is another game out there that is being FDA approved right now in a double blind test that's also for ADHD. Maybe it's even the same one. Does PureTech ring a bell?
It does, but I don't know that, well, the announcement that I read about the guy at Florida State, I don't think it had the name of their game in it. So.
Yeah,
that name is familiar, though.
Yeah, they are a big company. They have a couple of these products, but they are linked to pharmaceuticals. And so, what they want to do is to have games instead of drugs, but the people would still be paying similar to drugs, but less. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. You know, and I think that. You know, to me, the idea of being able to use some of these technologies, these approaches, is massive. Because, as you said, you know, if you can gamify, if you can, you know, do something to keep people engaged in their treatment, and it's something that they can do, you know, at home, you know, they can do it on their time, and it gathers some data. Or it helps monitor their overall symptoms and everything over time. You know, I think that would be very attractive for patients.
Yeah, one thing that we're also doing is, like, we're trying to outskirt stigma and treatment resistance by saying, okay, that one of the reasons when I'm talking to experts, I say it's a mental health game, right? But we're actually marketing it as an emotional fitness game. Because that's less threatening to a lot of people. Say, okay, this is personal development. This is like making me emotionally fit. This is something that isn't threatening. And we want to have, so the avatar in the game is the bot, or the character that is being developed to be the bot later at a later stage is Dr. Joy, which is a little play on Freud. You know, Freud means joy in German. Anyway, a bit nerd humor. What was I saying? I lost my
the bot that Dr. Joy, you were talking about how.
Yeah, treatment resistance and exactly. So we want the person, for example, to be playing the game. And if they display choice, they make choices and show signs of depression or anxiety, that our algorithm can figure out which part of the game would benefit them most. And then kind of like lead them to the part of the game that they can play where they don't have to at the beginning say, oh, I'm suffering from anxiety, I think I need help, but get the psychoeducation bit by bit along the way so that when they're actually, you know, feeling better and they can say, oh my gosh, I know, I think that could be part of my life and I'm okay with that because I know what's happening and I know how many other people have it and I know that I'm doing something against it. So those those were two of the huge thresholds of the first version, is saying, okay, first of all, that the person actually acknowledges that they are probably depressed, and that feeling that bad for that long isn't normal or isn't just a phase, and then actually wanting to do something against it and not fearing saying, okay, I'm crazy because I'm, you know, I'm going through depression or anxiety.
I see how that initial threshold of or that initial barrier of getting people to be cool with downloading the app, and even the idea of using the app, that would be an important obstacle to overcome there.
And I have an interesting tidbit that totally surprised me and might surprise you as well. When I was building the app, you always have a target market in mind, right? And I thought, okay, I'm going to make this between 18 and 28, because that's when a lot of the mental health issues arise. And that's the generation that is like digital native and plays a lot of games and everything. My 3,000 plus users in Australia and New Zealand, where the beta is live right now, are men 35 plus.
Ooh.
The biggest cohort.
Wow.
And I was super surprised. And if you look at the app, you know, we didn't want to go into the typical medical blue. So we went a little bit purple, and it turned out to be a little bit more girly than I had anticipated. But apparently that's not, you know, scaring the men off of downloading and playing the game.
Well, that's really interesting. So 35 plus.
Yeah, it's a big cohort. It's about like 65% of our players are 35 plus.
What would the top age be, Silva?
So far it's around 45.
45, so 35 to 45 approximately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's still surprising. I wouldn't have anticipated that.
Yeah. And men, I thought it would be more of something that women would be interested in, but I'm very happy about that, because men are a difficult group to infiltrate with mental health.
Well, you know, we've always wondered, when we teach this, we always say women go to therapists and men go to bars. We know that men probably experience depression at about the same rate as women. They just don't want to admit it, and they don't want to see a professional. But this gives them, you know, when boys play video games, one of the reasons they like them is because when they lose, nobody knows that they're losing. And so men mm-hmm. can get therapy in private, which I think would appeal to many men, especially in that age group.
One of the acquaintances in London. London is the third biggest startup hub in the world. It's first is San Francisco, then is Tel Aviv, and then comes London. And we have a lot of AI development here as well. And one of my acquaintances and a bit of a mentor from the AI side is called Pete Trainer. And he and his group developed a bot that's called Suebot. It's not Sue like the name, but suicide. And it's targeted for men. And they've had a lot of very positive outcomes. The bot is still training, so it's not public yet, but men seem to be able to open up towards a bot easier as an entry than to another person.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And I'm not surprised to hear that.
Well, and I think that if you know, when you think about what you were just saying just a moment ago, the openness that most men have to video games in general, you know, to think of their possible openness that they would have to a game, even if it's about, you know, their emotional well-being and everything, you know, maybe they would be more open to that. That's really interesting.
To finally have the data to show that it is mostly men.
That's fascinating. Now, was there as you had just mentioned, you know, it was the app is already available in Australia and New Zealand. Was that a strategy like for sort of a pilot testing, or was it, were there other reasons?
Well, the Collision Studios, the company that is helping me develop my app, does what all big game studios do. You have to test the beta, because like the first version that came out was riddled with spelling mistakes and bugs and crashes, and it was like, you know, half of what you guys have seen. And so you have to test that market somewhere. And if you do that, for example, in the States, then word will come around like this app is there. Ooh, interesting. And then, oh my gosh, the spelling mistakes and the crashes and everything. Nada. So you want to test it in an environment that is a closed market that speaks the same language. And then what comes also out of it is that Australia is in the time zone almost, I think, 11 or 12 hours ahead. So during their day, if there's a bug, we can fix it during their night. So the next day it's going to be better. So a lot of companies start in Australia and New Zealand, and then they go out from there.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, the tech world is very interesting.
I got to keep notes about this so that whenever, if I ever develop, I'll never develop.
Well, I know that all of this happens very quickly, but who would have thought, well, let's do it in Australia because then we can respond immediately.
Yeah.
Before the next day.
That's impressive.
Wow.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the difference of working with a company like Collision Studios is, and you know, so a little backstory, if I may, when I started thinking about making it a game, I did wireframes. A wireframe is like a screenshot, and you have, for example, one game has 20 wireframes, and then you can start with drawing them, or you have a computer program, things like that. So I actually did a PowerPoint wireframe, and I sat my partner down, and I made him do the emotional bids one, and it took him like 5 to 10 minutes, and he was complaining the whole time. He says, "This is so boring. I hate it." But half a year later, he still knew what I was talking. He still mentioned emotional bits, so it worked. And I told that to Collision Studios, to my developers, and they had a laugh. And then I sent it in, and they came back with a completely different version or different way of offering that information and that learning process. And it just, I would have never come up with that. So their expertise in games and my expertise and my team's expertise in psychology is like a beautiful match.
Yeah, that's very cool. We had the opportunity to look at the app a little bit already, and you know, it does. I really like how it engages you from the beginning. I mean, you know, right away you're able to. I mean, you're playing and it's asking you questions, but it's not like beating you over the head with learning. It's just, hey, here's the situation. What should this guy do?
Right.
And, you know, and as you go through that, you're learning about, you know, some of these bids and different things. And it's really, really elegant the way that it does that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So that's just half me and half Collision Studios.
Yeah.
Well, I like the fact that you have to keep tapping and touching, and it keeps you engaged.
Yeah.
I think if I had just sat and it progressed on its own, I probably would have lost interest. But it makes you interact with it. And that's, to me, that was the appeal.
Yeah.
As a non-native, that's the appeal. It kept me engaged.
Right.
Right. And few do.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Did you finish one of the stories? Did you get the coins?
Yes, got some coins.
Yeah. So the experience of seeing the coins flit up the screen actually is one of the major parts of getting people interested in the game. So it's these small little things, like I would have said, okay, just make, you know, the little symbol that they have more coins. It's like, no, you want to visualize it. It's something popping up.
Up the coins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, but, you know, and that's that persuasive technology, right? Yeah. That's the use of little reinforcers that keep you hooked, keep you engaged, so that you know, I want to get some more coins. I want that to happen again. We talked again the other week about how, you know, you use levels and you use achievements and some of those little things to kind of keep you going, because, man, I got to get to that next level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what do you see as far as, the app comes out, it's going to come out in May here in the United States. It's the United States and in the UK, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would that be sort of the ultimate version of that particular app? And are you then going to work on some others, or is this application going to continue to evolve?
It's going to continue to evolve. So it is kind of like the groundwork in tech language. We call it minimum valuable product. So it's going out there, people can play it and everything, but is the minimum we can offer. It's also still a bit short, so we're still adding things on it right now, and I'm raising money to be able to add features or game parts to it that are the therapeutic part, you know, for to fight depression and anxiety. So but that will be inside this game. And so one of the things that is going to be more pronounced is that you can actually have a limited conversation with Dr. Joy, and that you're not forced through the stories as you are now. You can choose, for example, to have a Dungeons and Dragons. You can choose to have an office or a workplace situation. You can choose a love story. So first of all, that, or you could go straight to the sad box or something like that. We have to figure out exactly how we're going to name everything and how the journey is going to be. But it's I think we probably, the thing is, if you make an app too big, then it gets a little bit cumbersome. So if we did, we would probably do something similar, like a copy looking slightly different for, let's say, eating disorders. Or for OCD or ADHD or something like that. So we wouldn't, this would be, I think the biggest version of this would be depression and anxiety.
Gotcha. Now, you've already mentioned a few things, but what, are there other aspects of EQ that is, you know, makes it, you know, takes it to that next step beyond what apps are already available? There are already some apps out there for, you know, kind of tracking and monitoring some of these things, but what are some other things that make EQ sort of that next level up?
Well, I think because the whole idea is that you learn a psychological skill in a game, then you have to use it in a story to be able to level up in the story. So we say that the learning process is three steps in the actual learning, the implication, and then the outside of the app, real world experience of that. So it becomes ingrained into your psychological tool set. And I don't think anything out there exists that does that. And a lot of the apps that are out there and aren't actually quite good, like Super Better, Happify, Pacifica, those would be the three that would be closest competition. They do teach these things, but it's all within the app in a certain amount, and you don't really practice it. So I think that, for example, one of the things that I want to do for the depression is to have actual CBT exercises where you have to bring your avatar, and you have to make these, you know, that activating event belief conclusion. You have to make that and do that. And so once you've done it three times with your avatar, then it's going to be a lot easier for you to do it in real life and to apply and to recognize a situation where that's happening. And usually you can only get that in therapy with someone sitting down and walking you through it the first couple of steps.
Right. That's fantastic. Because I agree, there's not that, most of the apps that I've seen so far doesn't really have that application aspect, you know, mm-hmm. where you're actually applying what you're learning. It's just more informative. I really like the Pacifica app, but again, it doesn't have that that final piece.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you foresee therapists, for example, using this with their patients? Is there a way to that therapists or counselors can use it with their patients?
Well, I think that IQ is probably going to be used for prevention and for low level depression and anxiety. So I don't think it would be for deep therapy, but any therapist could say, you know, there's this game, why not try it? And then it would be like a little bit of extra on top of what they're doing anyway. We're not designing it to be part of the therapy. We're kind of designing it to be instead of a low level therapy, like, you know, the group CBT or something like that, to have about that kind of impact. So yeah, I mean, if we get FDA clearance, theoretically, if someone comes into their GP and says, you know, I'm not feeling well, and they're low, moderate depression, then that would be something that they could play with and then would still help.
Right. Well, I'll say from what I've played with it so far, I have thought about some, you know, there's a cohort or a group of patients that I have mm-hmm. who who aren't severely impaired. You know, they're not, you know, they're certainly not suicidal, or they're not, you know, impaired to the point where they're not going to work and doing some of those kinds of things. And so they come to therapy, you know, once a month or something like that. You know, I could see this as a way to help bridge some of those appointments, just as they are working to kind of, you know, keep up with some of the concepts that we're working on, especially, you know, thinking about the bids, you know, when you're thinking about relationships and that kind of stuff. You know, I, just as I was playing it with it just a little bit, I was immediately starting to think of some patients that would really do well with it.
Right.
Yep. I mean, that's amazing. And sometimes I have to be careful because I'm in my little bubble, you know, I with my team, and I think I need to do more outreach and communicate with therapists. And, you know, that kind of feedback is amazing. And, you know, I tell everyone that I get in touch with, like, you know, if you have ideas, if you have feedback, if you think that something, you know, should be changed or added or something, like, bring it on, because I want to make it as good as possible, as beneficial as possible. And you do get kind of like stuck in your own vision, even though my team is quite big altogether. Working on the app right now are about 7 people. But, you know, 7 people is still, you know, a micro environment that with your own ideas. So thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah. I really like it from that perspective. And I encourage a lot of patients to get apps and to try some of those things.
I would have, that was my first thought when I started using it. I have a couple of patients with fairly severe anxiety, and this would be a good activity for them to be engaged in between sessions, you know, so I could see them once or twice a month instead of weekly, and they could be doing these activities in the interim.
Yeah.
And I could see them benefiting from this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And we've really enjoyed, taking a look at it. I can't wait for it to be released, and so we can start getting our patients.
We keep talking about it's going to be available in May. Like, May is a long way off, and suddenly I'm sitting here thinking, oh, that's only a week or so away. So we don't mean to put any pressure on you, but let's get it out here.
Pretty much it's going to be end of May. So, but you know, you guys are going to be the first to know as soon as we go live. So, you know, you can spread the word or give it to your patients.
We certainly will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to it.
And it's going to be available on all platforms? Okay.
Yes, Android, Amazon, Apple, you name it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Good.
And most primarily for phones, or will it be on tablets as well?
It's tablets and phones, but it's not computer.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It's meant to be mobile. So it's like mHealth means the mobile health.
Yeah. Right.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, that's what we were doing some things earlier, about a year ago, and we wanted them to be as mobile as possible.
Yeah.
So that's what we were thinking too, is to put them on phones, because that's what people have.
Exactly.
And more and more people are using phones instead of computers.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's going down. The computer use is going down and mobile phone use is up. Mm-hmm. And you know, you always have it with you, and you can always do a game that's in between things while you're waiting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
and if you're afraid to fly, you can do it at the airport while you're waiting for your flight.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the future, there's so many things: augmented reality, virtual reality. Especially when you say flight and phobia, that's perfect for these things. You have you know, all the bots coming up. There are a lot of really exciting things happening right now in development. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the future wearable technology, it's all happening.
Right.
Exactly. You know, I think about that a lot with the, like, I have an Apple Watch, and I think about it all the time. You know, I can hit it a couple of times, and I can see what my heart rate is, for example, and how wonderful would it be to have an app that, and this is, you know, this is one of my app ideas, but, you know, feel free. Because how, you know, the likelihood of me learning that language is not very good, but you know, being able to monitor your heart rate so that, you know, if you feel anxiety building, your heart rate's going to increase, and so your watch kind of cues you, hey, you know, your heartbeat's kind of getting up there, you're not exercising, you know, maybe take a couple of deep breaths and, you know, just relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, about when two and a half years ago when I started, you know, working on the concept, there was an app out there. I forgot got the name and I can't find it anymore, but it was an app that used all of the technology of the smartphone to monitor. It was the light outside, voices in the background, the language you use, which apps you were on, how long it was on and off, and the GPS and everything. You used all this information, and it could give really precise feedback about your health and your mental health and your physical health and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, in a way, it's a good thing, because, you know, if especially if you've been through depression and you don't want to relapse, that's a good thing that could help, you know, you be aware, or if, you know, you don't want to burn out or something. But I think it was premature to the market because people were very worried about the privacy, and they didn't want to know. They felt it was too intrusive. Mm-hmm. So I think that those kind of apps are going to be everyday part of our lives in 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, come a lot of ethical questions along, like who is dealing with the data? How do we protect the data? Like, where is it stored? And all these extra things that come into play when you have those kind of products.
Right. Absolutely. But it's, you know, that field, it seems to be evolving so quickly.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes in the next year or two or three.
But we have to use it. When we did a podcast this week on technology, and we were talking about the advances that are made in psychometric testing, that the computer-based tests are so much more accurate, and we have to rely on those technologies.
And
as you say, there are rural differences. Our country is so large. We have states where you could be hundreds of miles away from the nearest therapist.
Yeah.
And the solution for that is to do this online.
Yes, exactly. Or all the people that don't have healthcare coverage who could can't spend $60 to $300 an hour, you know, to speak to someone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So, well, we are definitely going to be excited to hear, you know, when EQ is released and available to everyone. And you have what?
No, I was going to say, let's do this when it comes out.
Yeah.
The whole thing, and then could we contact you again?
Of course.
And let's interview you after we've seen the whole thing, and then we can really start pushing it here.
Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love that. And we could probably do something like screen sharing so that we could play with the app live and, you know, kind of like speak about it that way if you
let's
want.
Let's do that. Yeah, this would be a wonderful way to introduce this whole technology to our population, to our audience. So,
yeah,
let's do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Good.
It'd be very cool. So, all right. So then there will be more to come.
More to come.
All right.
Stay tuned. We'll keep everybody hooked. This is persuasive technology.
Yes, exactly.
There's more to come, right?
Okay.
All right. We'll get those dopamine levels up where they should be.
On the next season of
exactly.
The cliffhanger. So,
hey, the other thing, didn't you say that you were doing this as a dissertation?
Yes, exactly. So,
you know, most of us hate our dissertations after we've completed them.
Right.
And we stop. We never return to the topic again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I have moments of loathing.
Right, yes. Right.
To be absolutely honest. And I would tell anybody who wants to start a startup and do their PhD at the same time to never do that. Do one first and then the other.
Yes,
if you want a life and you don't want to have anxiety yourself.
Well, I'm glad you admitted that, because I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute, she's doing a dissertation, but she's raising $1.8 million. And I said, that's an interesting.
Yeah. And fundraising is one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Yeah. It really took a toll. I had to start like practicing what I preach and doing my own meditation and my own calming, and, you know, watching what I eat and how I work out and things like that because of that.
Yeah. Understood.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, keep up the good work. And we'll look forward to talking to you again soon, I hope, toward maybe the end of May, the beginning of June.
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, that'll be very exciting.
Good talking to you guys. And your show is really fun. So thank you for letting me be part of that.
Thank you.
Anytime. You're welcome on anytime. And we look forward to hearing more ideas and more things that you're going to be working on. So definitely stay in touch.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast.
Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.